Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side of our marked Gemaras, where you can see under the Nosei, the topic heading, Devorim Hana'asim Bishar HaMizroch Shel HaAzara, different procedures that take place at the eastern gate, the eastern entrance point to the Azorah, to the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. The reason we're mentioning this is because the Mishnah had mentioned 3 different activities that take place over there. Of course, what's relevant to our Masechta is the fact that the Sota woman is given the special Sota waters to drink in that particular location. 2 other points were mentioned, the Mishnah, Taras Mitzora, and the Yoledes. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Shisham Mashkines HaSotas V'chulei, Bishlam HaSotas Dichtiv. I understand well that the Sota woman stands in the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, V'hemid HaKoynes Isha Lifnei Hashem. The expression, Lifnei Hashem, Rashi tells us, is the a reference to the gateway, the entranceway, which was the standard entrance for anyone coming into the Azorah. One would enter from the east. Mitzorayim Nami, the Dichtiv, the Pasuk says in the context of the Mitzorah, Vehemid HaKoyim HaMitaher, and it goes on to say, Lifnei Hashem Pesach Oil Moyed. So again, you have the purification of the Mitzorah. We made reference to this in our previous year, that it takes place at the eastern gate. As you can see, the Pasuk says, again, Lifnei Hashem. Elo Yoledes, my taimo. The Yoledes, the woman who recently gave birth, and she has to bring sacrifices shortly after, let's say, at the conclusion of the Tumah period, the Tumah and Tahara period that follows a birth, so the woman is required to bring sacrifices. So the Yoledes, why is it, my Taima, what is the reason that she is to be positioned over there? In Leimo Mishum the Asyon V'Kaimin Akorbanaihu, if it's because the women who have a responsibility to bring their sacrifices. The Asyan means they come, the Kaiman, and they stand next to where their korban is being processed. The Sanya, Ein korban shalodim korev, a person's sacrifice is not offered, Elohim Kain, unless Oimed al Gabov, unless the owner is present, is standing near it when it's being processed. So, is that the reason that the woman stands at the eastern gate, which is the closest point that she can reach while her sacrifice is being processed? Well, then, and she's there because of this particular rule, then Ihochi Zovin Vizovos Nami, then there are other types of obligatory sacrifices that should have been mentioned. The sacrifices brought by a Zav or a Zova, these are people that experienced defilement. The Zav is a reference to emissions that come forth from men, and Zavos are emissions that come forth from women that create defilement, and a subsequent sacrificial requirement. So the Gemara says, in Hochinami, in fact, you're right. The Mishnah mentioned of the Yoledes, when in fact it could have mentioned these as well. The Tana Chado Minayu Nokad, and the Tana chose one of several examples of people that are obligated to bring sacrifices, and when they do so, since they cannot go into the Azorah proper, they go to the nearest point. in order to be present when their korbonos are being offered. The topic heading that we see, the nosei, you see on the side of the Gemara, Ein Mashkin Shtei Sotos Keachas. Two sota women are not to be processed, or let's say drink the sota waters at the same time. The Gemara, Tonu Rabbona, Ein Mashkin Shtei Sotos Keachas. Kidei Shelo Yehe Libo Gas Bechaverta. We don't want to have two sota women present at the same time in the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash, because that will create a situation where one woman might influence the other not to confess. In other words, her mere presence, the mere presence of another woman there might serve to deter a woman who otherwise would have confessed her, confessed her guilt, and thereby prevent the name of Hashem from being erased, as we discussed in our previous shiur. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi, you notice, is across from here. Shelo yehe libo gas bechaverta, shemo ho'achas omedes alburya v'eino moda lomar tameani. One of the women standing upon her refusal to confess guilt. She is, let us say, convinced of her innocence, so she is not going to confess. Now, if she doesn't confess, that means she's willing to go ahead and drink the water. And the sota water, of course, includes the fact that the sota parsha, the section of the Torah dealing with the sota, including the name of God, is erased over the water that she will drink. So you have one woman is there, and she is not going to confess. She is certain about her innocence. The charverta shehitameya, the second sota lady who really did sin. She's really tameya. She's really defiled in the sense that she has really sinned. Ro'a ezu she'eino moida. Well, she sees the first woman that's standing there, not confessing, that woman that's willing to drink because she's convinced she's innocent. V'soivele says boishoso, and she's willing to bear the shame of what is going to happen by her non-confession. And we discussed this also in our previous shiurim, the shame that she goes through when she is brought there and it drinks. And this woman sees the first woman convinced of her innocence and willing to go through the whole thing. And the heart of this second woman then becomes influenced by the first woman. This second woman who really is Tamea and should confess and thereby spare herself all of the indignities of the sota process, but she doesn't. If she would have been alone, she would have confessed, and as we said before, her confession would have stopped the whole sota process, including the erasure of God's name, and spare her of all the indignities. So the Tanaic source that we just started said, we don't want two sotas drinking as and explaining Shelo Yehe Libo Gas B'Chaverta, as we just explained. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Lo Min Hashem Huzeh, meaning that's not the reason. I agree with the din, I agree with the law that you don't do two at once, but not for that reason. Elo Omar Kro, the Pasuk says Oisa, which equals Levada. In the Pasuk we see the Rashi quotes the pasuk v'ishpia oisoh ha'kohen. The kohen binds her to an oath concerning her claim of innocence, and the word oisoh is a word appearing grammatically speaking, it's in the singular form, she, by herself. Well, the Gemara asks, Tanakama hoksivosa, the Tanakama, does he not recognize the fact that it's a scriptural command for her to be by herself? Why didn't the Tanakama cite the pasuk? The Gemara answers, Tanakama Rabbi Shimon hi. The Tanakama, there's no name in the source, but it happens to be Rabbi Shimon. Of course it says Osa, but he elaborates on it, the Dorish Ta'am Dekra. The style of Rabbi Shimon is to offer reasons for that which the Torah says and states without a reason. Rabbi Shimon offers reasons. Uma Ta'am Ko'omar. And what we see in the source is really the explanation for the Pasuk, so that the Tanakam acknowledges the Pasuk and its dictum that she shall be by herself. All that we see in the Reisha, the first opinion, that of Rabbi Shimon, is the reason behind it. Matam Osa Levado. Why does the Torah say she, which means Osa, which means by herself? Kedei shelo yehi libo gas b'chaverta, so as to avoid, or so as to preempt this situation of libo gas b'chaverta, a woman that otherwise would have confessed, but because she's in the presence of another woman that's not confessing, so she is thereby influenced. My binayu, what is the practical difference between these two approaches? The Tanakama giving a reason, and Rabbi Yudah saying, this is the scriptural dictum without any reasons. Iko binayu recessus. Recessus is a trembling woman. The point of difference between them would be a case where one of the women that are standing there, she is trembling. Now, how do we apply that? We take a look at the Rashi. We have a little star in the Rashi a few lines down. You can see Iko binayu. Isha she'onu royim bo shehi roseses me'emas hamayim v'ein amoida. Imagine you have there two women. One of them is not confessing. The other woman is also remaining silent, but she is shaking. she is shaking, and yet she is not confessing. Laman d'omar, according to the explanation of Rabbi Shimon, shelo yehi libo gas bo. The idea being that the second woman should not be charged up with a certain self of confidence. Well, zu onu royin she'ein libo gaspa. This trembling woman, we see that she's not being charged with a sense of confidence. She's remaining silent. She's not confessing, but not because of her receiving a sense of self-assurance from the first woman. So if you have a trembling woman, I would have no problem having her drink or being present with another sota. This woman, is not being influenced. And I think it's safe to say she also wouldn't be capable of influencing someone else. Ulaman de lo dorish time of the cry alexeris hakosuv, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who didn't give a reason for the pasuk, but just said that's what it says. It says by herself, ein mashkinim acheres. If you have a woman that is roseses, she would not be allowed to drink together with someone else. Each woman, regardless of her condition, must be alone. Let's turn back to the Gemara. After giving this point of difference, the roseses, then according to Rabbi Shimon, it would be possible to have a trembling woman drinking alongside another sota. Well, is that really an option? Is that really so? Roseses mi mashkin. According to the analysis we just gave, the roseses could be given to drink along with another sota woman. But is that really so? We have a principle that we don't do mitzvahs all bundled together. And what we mean by that, we'll appreciate that as we go through some of the examples. But Rashi says, Chavilos, Chavilos, Shinire Kemi Shehoyu Olov Lamasui, Umemahir Lefarek Maso. It looks like someone who is burdened with a mitzvah, that the mitzvahs represent a burden to him, and he's trying to free himself of the burden. That's when you pack together a lot of mitzvahs and try to accomplish a bunch of mitzvahs in one shot. What do we mean by that in our context? That's like having two soitas together at one time. And one should not do mitzvahs in that fashion. Disnan, and here the source elaborates, Ein mashkin shtei soitas ka'achas. You don't process two soitas at one time. Ein mitarin shnei mitzoroyim ka'achas. And two mitzoroyim should not be in the eastern gate receiving their purification at the same time. Ein roitzarin shnei avodim ka'achas. And the boring of the ears of a Hebrew slave after 6 years of enslavement, if the Hebrew bonded worker wants to continue with his master till the Yovel years, so there's a process known as Ritzias Oizen. So those two slaves should not have the Ritzias Oizen, which involves the boring of an ear, a hole made in the Eved's ear. You shouldn't have two slaves, two bonded workers receiving this at the same time. V'ein erfin shtei agolos kachas. This is a reference to the Eglo Arufa, the ritual when a murder victim is found between two cities. The closer of the two cities brings a calf whose neck is to be broken, and serves, as we'll say, an interim form of atonement. So two of these should not be processed at the same time. Why? Why don't we do two at once? Lefi she'ein oisin mitzvahs chavilos chavilos. We don't want to do mitzvahs in bundle form. So if that's the case, then how could we have suggested before that two sotos could be processed at once, could drink together, if you see one of them is a rosesis, according to Rabbi Shimon? Omar Abaye v'temor of Kana lo kashya. Really, there is no difficulty here. Kan b'kohen echod, kan b'shnei kohanim. It depends. If one kohen is processing two sotas, that would be a problem of mitzvos chavilos. But if it's each sota has her own kohen that is tending to her, then there would be no problem of chavilos. So that we said before that you can have, according to Rabbi Shimon, two sotas. If one of them is a roseses, you can have them if each woman has a separate kohen processing them. V'alkein oicheis bivgodeho. The Mishnah made reference as part of denigration. The Kohen grabs upon her clothing and he exposes the upper part of her chest. Tonu Rabbonon. The Pasuk says in the Parsha of Sota, Ufora es Roish Ho'isha. The word Ufora, Rashi points out, means expose. Something that's covered and you remove a cover, it becomes exposed. And the verb for that is Ufora. So what the Pasuk translates and the Pasuk translates as saying that the Sota, who is of course a married woman, her hair, her head is exposed, indicating it had been covered till that point. This is the source that's often cited for the Jewish requirement, or the modesty requirement, of married women needing to have their hair covered. You see in the case of the Sota, her hair is uncovered. Ein li ela rosha. Well, the Pasuk speaks about her head being revealed, being uncovered. Gufa, I mean, where do we see anything about her body being exposed? The Mishnah mentioned that the Kohen grabs her clothing, and the result of that is her chest is exposed, her liba, her heart is exposed, meaning the upper part of her chest is exposed. That's a revealing of her body. Where do we learn that from? Talmud Lomar Ha Isha. the pasuk used that word, and from that we see that her body is exposed. Well, im kein ma tam lomar fora es rosha. My understanding of this is that once you say that you expose the woman, well, that would include her head. So why does the pasuk have to specify rosha? Answer: malamed shakayin soiser es saira. The pasuk is teaching us that not only is her hair is revealed, but the covered hair was in all likelihood in a braid. The sota woman has her braid undone, so that her hair is not only exposed, but it's also set free, unbraided. And all of that, as we explained in our previous shurim, is part of the bizoyon and the nivol, the denigration that the sota woman is subjected to. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hoya liba no lo megalehu. In our Mishnah, we saw Rabbi Yehuda qualifying the halacha of revealing the body of the woman, and that is, if she has she is an attractive woman, then she would remain unexposed. The Gemara now raises a question, and it takes a number of lines to develop. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading here, and it reads, Gilui Gufa Isha, the revelation of her body, Besota, in the case of the Sota, and a second topic introduced is Beskila, in a case of stoning. Let us say a woman violated a mitzvah, a commandment, the violation of which carries with it a penalty of stoning. For example, Shabbos, knowing Shabbos violation, premeditated Shabbos violation, that is punishable by skila. Of course, if there were witnesses that warned her just before her Shabbos violation. In these two areas, we see the phenomenon of revealing the woman's body. Al ha-gemora li-yashev stira b'shitas rebutiv rabbonon b'inyin choshishin li-yuhur. The job of the Gemara is to resolve what appears to be a contradiction within each one of these shitas. Two statements of Rebbe Yehuda that appear to be contradicting, two statements of the Rabbonon that appear to be contradictory regarding the concern that we have for let's say immoral thoughts developing as a result of seeing a woman exposed. So in our Mishnah, we saw the Tanakhama saying she's exposed under all circumstances. Rabbi is saying if she's attractive, she's not to be exposed. So Lamein Rod Rabuda Chayish Lihur of Rabbanan Lo Chayshi. Are you then suggesting that Rabuda is concerned? He takes into consideration Hirhur, the immoral thoughts that arise upon seeing the exposed woman. He is concerned with that, and therefore he adopts this preemptive stance whereby don't expose her if she is attractive. And the Rabbanan say they're not concerned with that. Well, the whole Iposhaminon Luhu, we have what appears to be an opposite situation. In other words, where each one of these shitas, Rebbe and Rabbanan, take an opposite point of view. Desanya Ha'ish, and this is a source dealing with skila, with stoning. It says Ha'ish mechasen oisei perek echad milafonav, for isha shnei prokim echad milafonav the echad milachareha. B'nei shekula erva. A man, when he is stoned, so he's basically, he's naked with the exception of the male genital organs are covered. So there's a type, we'll call it a loincloth or a fig leaf if you prefer, that covers him from in front. A woman, her genital area, that part of her anatomy is to be covered from in front and from behind. However, the rest of her body is totally exposed. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned with Hirhur. When she's stoned, there are people present. There are other people present at the stoning. She's basically naked with the exception of that particular area of her anatomy. We'll say there are two fig leaves, one from in front, one from behind. And V'chachomim oimrim ho'ish niskal orum ve'ein ho'isho niskeles aruma. The Chum say the man is unclothed, however the woman is fully clothed. When she is stoned fully clothed. Well, right there you see, focusing for the time being on Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda, in the case of the Sota, don't expose her if she's attractive. In the case of the stoning, Rebbe Yehuda says, she's basically totally exposed. Omar Rabba. Rabba explains, and the answer takes a few lines. We have a long answer marking. Rabba says there isn't any contradiction. You have to look into the depth of each one of the cases. Haha, in the case of the Sota, Taimo Mai. Why is Rebbe Yehuda Choshesh? Why does he seem to be concerned? The Sota woman, after going through the whole process and drinks the water, she might end up innocent. Nothing happens to her. She then walks out of the Beis Din. She's there in the Azora, in the presence of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. She departs there, and the young Pirchei Kuna, the reference to the young Kohanim who are present, then having seen her exposed and then leaving the Azora, their minds will be on her. Yisgaru Bobi, they'll be aroused. That involves improper thoughts. Hossam, in the case of stoning, okay, so they saw the woman naked, but ha mistakla, she was stoned. There's nothing for them to be aroused about anymore. The woman that they saw is now dead. V'chitema osiz giri b'achrenaisa, you'll say, well, if you see one woman exposed, you'll become aroused regarding other women. Well, that's not the way the Yetzer Hara works. Ha'omar Rabba Gemiri, we have a tradition, the Ein Yetzer Hara, Sholeit Ela B'ma She'enov Roos. The Yetzer Hara has rule over us only with regard to those that we saw. So that if they saw the woman being stoned and she was naked at the time, and then you see another woman a regular woman clothed, that the fact that you saw the stone woman unclothed is not going to be the source of arousal with regard to one's seeing other women on the street. The Gemara continues, Omar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda Kashya, Derabbanan ad Rabbanan lo Kashya. As far as the thrust of the Gemara till now, we were given the feeling that Rabbi Yehuda was the subject of a contradiction, and of course we gave an answer to that, but the Rabbanan were not the subject of any difficulty. But the Rabbanan are also the subject of difficulty. In the case of the Sota, we saw the Rabbanan not concerned with Hira. They said, just expose her whether she's attractive or not. In the case of the stoning, they said, "Ein ho'isha niskel seruma." She's to remain clothed. So is that not a contradiction within the Rabbanan? Don't we have to deal with their opinion? Elo Omar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda lo kashya k'dishonin. Rava points out that as far as a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda, there is no contradiction, as we already answered. We continue now at the top of Omid Beis. The Rabbonon ad Rabbonon nami lo kashya. There isn't any contradiction within the Rabbonon either. Hocho taimomai. Here in the case of the Sota, why did they say expose her under all circumstances? And they didn't, let's say, place as a high priority the issue of choshishin lihirhor. Mishum, because the pasuk says v'nivosru kol hanoshim. All women are to be put on notice. They're, by seeing what happens, they are warned not to behave immorally. And in order to accomplish that, we want the sotumim to be disparaged, denigrated as much as possible. Rashi says at the top, Ochotai Momai Amri Rabbonon Shemitzvah Levaisha, Vafilu Hi Tahora. Why is it that it is a mitzvah to subject her to this indignation, even if she is Tahora, meaning even if she did not commit the act of intimacy with the paramour? Because Mishum V'Nivosru Kol Anoshim Shleiviu Atzmo L'Idei Chashad, the Tiana Tznus, women know how to behave properly, not bring themselves to suspicion. How would a woman bring herself to suspicion? By going into seclusion with another man other than her husband. And by this disparagement, they are put on notice and they will behave modestly. So that's the explanation of the Rabbonin. By Sota, expose her, that will have public benefit. Let's continue. Hosam, in the case of Skila, where the Rabbonin said she stoned while clothed. And we just got finished with the Rabbonin being most primarily concerned with, we'll say, the public instruction, public warning. In the case of the Skila, there's no need for her to be unclothed. Ein l'cha yisur gadol mizeh. There's no greater warning and notice served than the fact that she is stoned. And therefore, there is no reason to have her stoned unclothed as, let's say, an extra form of warning. You might say, well, why not do both? Expose her to indignation and stone her. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, V'yohavto l'reacha kamocha. Literally, it means love your friend as yourself. But we learn from that, Bror lo misa yofet. Choose a proper, a dignified death. And that, with that in mind, it's like it's bad enough the person is being killed, they have to be naked also. That's an indignation, an unnecessary indignation, which would be a violation of Rav Nachman's teaching. Okay, so now what we just explained was the opinion of the Rabbonon that said the woman is stoned while clothed. Rabbi Yehuda says the woman is stoned naked. So are we to then conclude that Rav Nachman's opinion is not accepted by Rabbi Yehuda? Lema de Rav Nachman Tanohi? Should we say that Rav Nachman's teaching is really a Tanaic controversy and that his teaching conforms only to the opinion of the Rabbonon? Of course, throughout the Shas, you know, those who have learned numerous Dapim of Gemara will know that it's not a good position for an Amora to be in, Rav Nachman being an Amora with an opinion that is not accepted by all Tanoim. Of course, it happens, but it's not. It wouldn't say we'll say it's not a first choice for an Amora to adopt such a position. So the Gemara says, lo. Rav Nachman, who said Bror lo misa yofe, that's not a point of controversy here. The Kulei Alma Yisul de Rav Nachman. All opinions, Rav Yehuda, the Rabbanan, agree with Rav Nachman. The question is, how do you define misa yofe? V'hocha v'ha komivli. Here, in the case of stoning, the following is the point of controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Mor sovar. The Rabbonon hold, the Rabbonon who said she is not stoned naked, rather she's clothed, Bizyoine Odif Leit Fe Mitzara de Gufe. When you have to weigh two opposite considerations, one against the other, you have the personal embarrassment versus the physical pain of being stoned while clothed. Person who's clothed will die slower than someone who is stoned unclothed. The clothing worn by a person might serve as a type of cushion, shock absorber when the person in the stoning process is pushed off a cliff, which is part of the stoning process, the anticipation that the person falling two person heights downwards will die as a result of the impact. So if he's unclothed, the person will die faster. So the Rabbanan say that if you have to choose between disparagement or embarrassment versus physical pain, bizyoni odifle, personal disparagement, indignation is a greater consideration, greater need to avoid that than the physical pain. And therefore, the woman would prefer to be stoned while clothed, thereby sparing herself of bizoyon, personal indignation. And that's why the woman is not stoned while naked. And that's the misiyofa as far as the Rabbonan are concerned. Umor sovar, Rabbi Yehuda, tsara degufe odifle tfe mibizyone. The physical pain is a greater concern, more important for the person to avoid physical pain than the embarrassment. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, the woman's choice would be to be stoned unclothed to hasten her death. And that would be Misa Yofa, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned. So you can see, Misa Yofa is the subject of what constitutes a Misa Yofa, but as far as the principle that Rav Nachman taught, it is accepted by all. Hoysa Mechusa Levonim V'chulei. The Mishnah taught that a sota, a woman who comes to the eastern gate, and she's wearing white clothing and they are attractive on her, we put on her black clothing. Tana, imhoyu shchorim noyim, there are certain women that appear quite attractive while wearing black clothing. If that's the case, then mechasen oisa begodim mechuorim, then we have her don ugly clothing. Hoyu olel klei zohav v'chulei. The Mishnah mentioned that if she was wearing jewelry, she is stripped of her jewelry. Pshita, is that not obvious? Hashta nevuli menavil lo hani mibaya. You can see out by her the exposure of her hair, of her body, where menavil is to disparage her. You see that's what the sota process involves. Does it need to be taught? Does the Mishnah need to be taught that she removes her jewelry? So the Gemara answers yes, it needs to be taught, because mahu detema, I might have thought behani isla bizoyon tfei, that leaving her with an exposed body while at the same time wearing jewelry would be a greater form of bizoyon, of disparagement. Kidamri, and she is, there's a common saying, shaliach artiel v'siyamisani. Imagine the image of a person stripped naked while wearing shoes. That is a more ridiculous looking scene than a person who's stripped naked without any shoes on. So I would have thought the same thing here. Have her body exposed while leaving on her the jewelry. That would create the greater disparagement. Komash Malon, the Mishnah tells us that don't apply that thinking over here to the sota, and we conclude not only is she exposed, but her jewelry is also removed. On the side, we have a brief topic heading, Hevel HaMitzri. The Mishnah mentioned that after the Kohen pulls on her clothing, exposing her chest, V'achar kach mei v'chevel l'chuli, we have a question here that lasts a number of lines. Bo amine Rabbi Abba mirav huna chevel ha-mitzri, mao shi'akev besota. The Mishnah mentioned that this special palm reed rope is brought. Is it binding? And here there's a pun, if you like. Is the presence of this specific material rope a binding requirement, or is it just an example of something that will keep her clothing up? It's true we speak about her upper body being exposed, but we don't want her clothing to fall off completely. So the rope is wrapped around her to keep the clothing up. So now, is the question that we're asking is, since the Mishnah made reference to a special kind of rope, is that a binding factor, or could anything be used? The Gemara presents two possibilities. Aleph, Mishum Shulo Yishmetu Begadeo Me'olehu Ubetziltzu Kot Namisagi. Is the consideration based on her clothing not falling off, not slipping off? And if that is the primary consideration, then a tzilzul cotton, a thin type of band, would be also acceptable. That too could keep her clothing up. Oidilma mishum domamar, or is the chevel hamitzri used because of that which is taught in an upcoming Tanaic source? It says, he chogro lo betzilzul lefikoch kaimevi chevel hamitzri v'koshlo lomar lo midodeha me'akev. It's since it's taught in this Tanaic source that the way we deal with the sota is in a measure for measure fashion. She, in trying to make herself attractive to the paramour, so she wore some type of decorative tzilzul, decorative type of band, and therefore, measure for measure, we bring something that is obviously not cosmetic, this chevel hamitzri, which is, we'll say it's ugly, for lack of better description. We bring this type of rope because we're not looking at the function that it performs, but rather what it represents. It represents the cord that we're going to use here is to represent the antithesis of what she was trying to do. She was trying to beautify herself with types of bands. We bring that type of rope, string, band, that is the opposite. And that would be the Hevel HaMitzri. And if that is the consideration, then Me'akev means it would be a binding factor. Omar Lei. So, Rabbi Huna answers, Rabbi Abba, Tenisuha, you can come to your conclusion, and we'll say it's like the Aleph possibility, from what it said in the Mishnah. It said, V'achakach mevi chevel hamitzri, v'kosh l'malo midudeha, after the Kohen exposes the upper part of her body, the chevel hamitzri is brought, and it's bound above her breasts, kedei shelo yishmetu begodel me'olel, so as to prevent her clothing from slipping off. So you can see that the Mishnah's concern is the functionality aspect more so than the representative factor. V'chol haroitze lirois bo yireh. The Mishnah said anyone who wants to come and see the sota ritual, the sota process, can come. Now, it would seem from that anyone means anyone, including men folk. The topic heading that we've assigned to this section of the Gemara is Mi Roya Es Asoita Bazar. Who really is there to see the sota? Our Mishnah, though, has an inherent contradiction. And here the Gemara asks, Ha Gufa Kashya. Amriz Kolo Roitza Liroz Bo Roya. On the one hand, you say anyone who wants to come and see it is welcome to come and see. Almo Lo Shno Gavri Velo Shno Noshi. No distinction made between men and women. Vahodartoni, and then it says, Kol ha noshim mutaros lirosa. All the women folk are allowed to see it. Noshim in, anoshim lo. That would indicate only the female population, excluding men folk. Omar Abaye. two approaches to this. The first is taken by Abai. He says, Tirgumal, and here's a very tricky word. The Aleph in this word is really a, we'll say, a prefix. It's instead of the word Al, Ayin Lamed, the Aleph is used. So the Resha of the Mishnah that said Kol, Harotzidur's Ba, the Kol, anyone who wants to come, is explain that word, A Noshim, with reference to women folk. Oh, so that the opening of the Mishnah, or the earlier phrase, that is, that Kol Harotzidur's Ba Roya, is a reference to women folk are able to see, and then you don't have the contradiction within the Mishnah. Omar le Rava v'ha kol harotzi liros bo roya katani. Rava, consistent with his, his attitude or his practice throughout the Shas, he says to give pshatim, to give explanations that deny the presence of words that are there in the Mishnah is something I can't accept. It says in the Mishnah, anyone, an inclusive expression, including men. That's what it says. So how can you say that that is a limitation, that's it's limited to women? Elo Omar Rava. So this gives rise to Rava's approach. The Mishnah is to be understood thusly. Kol harotzi liros baroya, anyone who wants to come can see the sota process, lo shno gavri v'lo shno noshi, no distinction made between men and women. However, v'noshim chayovos lirosa, there's a greater sense of urgency for women to come and see it. They're obligated to come and see. Shenemar, v'nivosru kol anoshim v'lo ta'aseno kezimaskeno. Women are put on notice, a little shot in the arm for modesty, and they will learn from what they see here with the sota not to practice a free, loose, immodest lifestyle. The Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we assign a general topic heading to the upcoming sugya. It's called Midah Keneged Midah, loosely translated as measure for measure. The Mishnah. The Midah Shalda Moideid Bo Modedim Lo. The way that people conduct themselves, especially with regard to others, that is the way he will be dealt with. And practical examples from the Sota. He kishto es atzmo lavera hamokom nivla. She adorned herself in anticipation of sin. The Almighty comes and disparages her. When we say the Almighty, the Torah given by the Kodesh Baruch Hu tells us she is to be subjected to indignation. He gilso es atzmo la'avera. She revealed herself in anticipation of an act of intimacy. Hamokom gila oleha. The Torah comes and exposes her, as we just got finished discussing in the previous section of Gemara. Biyerech hischila b'avera tchila v'achar kach habeten. In the act of intimacy, the yerech, literally the thigh, or that part of the body that's engaged in intimacy, has the initial sense of pleasure, and then her belly. Therefore, the curse that is placed upon her starts with her yerech and continues on to her beten. Ushar kol haguf lo poladen. The rest of her body also doesn't escape the pain, the punishment of the sota. The Rashi quotes the pasuk in which you see this point. The Rashi on the Mishnah, in the middle of the page, Yerech hischil baver tchila bederech tashmish hayerech nene tchila b'kiruv basar. At first, in intimacy, it's that part of her body that has initial pleasure. Therefore, lefikoch tilake yerech tchila lekalalosa. Therefore, in the case of the curse that the Torah that's stated with her regard, the Yerech is mentioned first. The Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef. Af al gav demida betela. Even though the formal form of court execution that we refer to as the Arba Mises Beisdin, there are four forms of court execution depending on what sin was committed. There is stoning, there is something called sreifa, loosely translated as burning, there is a sayif, beheading, with a sword, and chenek, a strangulation, where a rope is tied around a person's neck and drawn very tight, thereby causing asphyxiation and hence death by strangulation. So even though we do not do those anymore nowadays, bimida lo batil. Now the bimida means the same type of death will befall such offenders. So even though we don't have a court today that is licensed to carry out court executions, formal, one of the different four forms of executions we mentioned, nevertheless, heaven will ordain the offender to die with, we'll call it, an approximately similar type of demise. The Omar Rav Yosef, v'chein toni Rav Chiya. Rav Yosef says, and Rav Chiya includes this as part of a Tanaic source, miyoyim shecharav beis hamikdash. From the day that the temple was destroyed, afalpi shebot lo sanhedri, even though the high court is no longer functioning, and along with its cancellation, its dysfunction, also is the abandonment of the formal court executions. We skip the brackets momentarily. Din arba mises lo batlu. The principle behind the four forms of death have not vanished, are not canceled or voided. They are still around. I would like to say they're still alive and well, but that might create a mistaken impression. Before we go any further, we have the bracketed session that we skipped. Let's read it again. Afalpi shebotlu Sanhedrin arba mises lo batlu. Even though Sanhedrin is no longer functioning, it's ceased function, the four methods of execution have not ceased. They continue to be applied. Well, that's v'hal batlu, only they continue to be applied. They have been canceled. Ela din arba mises lo batlu. The principle of the four forms of execution, the presence, the reality of the four different forms of execution still exist in, we'll call it, in approximate forms. And here the diamonds, each one of the diamonds introduces one of the four different forms of court execution, and you'll see how they still exist nowadays in approximate form. So here, in order to appreciate the Gemara, it demands of us looking at not to focus on the literal court form of execution that we said no longer exists, but what each one of the what characterizes each one of the four forms of court execution. You'll see how they're still present. Mi shenischayev skila, someone who was guilty of a skila punishment. One example that comes to mind is someone who is a knowing Shabbos violator. That means he violated Shabbos knowingly. And for each one of these punishments, of course, it would have been preceded by the warning, a warning given to them immediately before their commission of the sin by two witnesses who specify the offense and its source in the Torah. And the offender nevertheless goes ahead and does it anyway. So someone who is guilty of a skila punishment, and it takes place nowadays. And Tosfos points out it may have even taken place in the time of the Sanhedrin, but in cases where you don't have a proper warning given ahead of time, or you have only one witness, so the court can't execute, even in the time of the functioning of the Sanhedrin, what happens to such people? They are guilty, they are offenders, so someone who is guilty of skila. So, o nofel min hagag, o chaya dor soso. Someone like that will end up falling off a roof. What's the point? Well, in skila, a person is pushed off a cliff that's a minimum of two person heights. I shouldn't say a minimum. That is the designed height, two person heights. And by falling, he's expected to die through the impact. Okay, so we don't have a formal base haskila in the vicinity of the court anymore. But person who's a Shabbos by might just find himself one day trying to adjust something on his roof and he falls off. Oh, chayador sasu, or a wild animal tramples him. And it's explained that imagine a large lion, for example, comes and thrusts his paws forward at an individual, causing him to hit the ground very hard and may very well die as a result. That's skila in its present form. Mishin is chayef sreifa, someone who is guilty of a sin punishable by sreifa. Sreifa has to do with, loosely translated as burning. Well, oh, no fail but the leko might find himself one day in a conflagration, in a fire, and die in the fire. Oh, no chosh makisha, or be bitten by a venomous snake, and the venom is said to burn him up. Mi shenishayev hariga, someone who is guilty of an offense carrying with it a penalty of death by the sword. Hariga, sayef, the sword. Oh, what happens to people like that? Oh, nimser lamalchus. Oh, listin boyin olav. The government might capture him and charge him with some kind of offense that the government feels is guilty of a death penalty. And standard governmental executions was done by beheading with a sword. Or a armed bandits might come and attack him and kill him with their swords. So that you see that even though there's no court sword execution, the Almighty has his ways of bringing the equivalent about. Mishin is chayev chanika, someone who is guilty of an offense punishable by strangulation. Hotovea benoharo, meispis saruki, he might end up drowning, also a form of asphyxiation, or dying through, saruki is a type of throat, a deathly throat ailment, which would lead to his strangulation. Tanya. Here we start a source. It's a rather long Tanaic source. You see that it continues down the upper third, approximately, of Daf Tes Omed Aleph. And it elaborates on this topic of measure for measure. Tanya. Hoya Rebbe Omer. Rebbe was known to say, "Minayin shebemidosh adam modeid ba modin lo," that the way a person conducts himself, thusly he is dealt with. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Besa saah b'shalcha terivena," and the word saah, you notice the word saah in there, and in fact, the word saah appears in almost a double fashion. A saw is understood for our purposes as a measure. So for our purposes, this means that for measure for measure, that's the way people are dealt with. Ein li ela saw. A saw in this context represents a large measure. And to bring it more down to home, it's a reference to a large sin. So that if this concept of measure for measure, if I had just this pasuk, I would think that is true with regard to the way we deal with major offenders. Minayin l'rabois, from where do we know to include, and now we have a list of words till practically the end of the line, which are all measures in declining sizes. So, and for purposes of analogy, we understand this is a reference to smaller sins. That even in with regard to the smallest type of sin, a person can be expected to, we'll say, pay the penalty in a measure-for-measure form. Minayin l'rabos, from where do we know to include in this concept of measure-for-measure, Tirkav, v'chatzi tirkav, kav, v'chatzi kav, rova, v'chatzi rova, tumon, v'uchla, minayin. All of these are different forms of measure in declining quantity. So, where do we know to include these as well? Talmud Lomar, ki kol se'on so'ein barash. This pasuk has an inclusive tone to it, including even small type offenses. And this, by the way, is a kind of a type of a Talmudic or Judaic secret to analysis of life's trials and tribulations. People go through life experiencing, inevitably, people experience different forms of pain and setbacks and frustrations. A person must ask himself, why is this happening to me? And in asking that, he's supposed to then review his own behavior. If a person, let us say, expects to be paid for services rendered, and you see that, and he sees that the employer is not paying him, you have to think for a moment: do I owe people money, and I am not paying them their due? So we've learned now that even small offenses, the Almighty is scrutinizing us 24/7. Even in the dark, we're held accountable for all of our behaviors. So, the Brisa goes on, "Uminayin shekol pruta pruta mitzarefes l'cheshbon gadol." Literally, from how do you know that all small coins join up to create a large account? Which means, Rashi explains that even though a person may have in fact committed small offenses and goes on day after day without having experienced any setback, he shouldn't think that he's gotten away with it. That's not true. But rather, all these small offenses could end up adding up to one large account. And then a big setback befalls the individual, and he has to then calculate, why is this happening? Must be because of all the small offenses that I had violated till now. So from where do we know this idea? Talmud Loimar, the Pasuk says, Achas li'achas limtsoi cheshboin. V'chein motzinu b'soita. And we have seen similarly in the case of the Sota shebemida shemodida ba modedu la. Through the behavior that she practiced, she receives in exchange due form. He omdo al pesach, and here we're using a double underline, one of our series markings. If you scan ahead, you'll see many of these down through the balance of this source. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivne heading, we have the word he with the double underline. Hadgoshes ma'aseh shel soitish osta kidei lefatois es haboya. We're emphasizing at each point the different practices and behaviors of the Sota woman in her anticipation of seducing the paramour. And each time what we do, what we, the Torah, instructs us to do, I say the Torah through rabbinic interpretation, what we do to her. He omda pesach besa leraos lo. She stood at the entrance of her house, specifically over there, in order to appear to attract him toward her. Lafikach kain ma'amido al shar nikanor umara kalona lakol. Therefore, she is stood at the eastern gate of the Azora, and her indignation, her disparagement, is then shown to all. Klona is her disparagement. He pirsa lois sudrin noyim al rosha. She covered her hair with some types of nice, attractive kerchiefs. Lefika kohen noito kipo me'al rosha manichoi tachas raglel. Therefore, the kohen comes in and rips the head covering off of her head and casts it down under her feet. He kishto loy poneha. She, in trying to attract the paramour, had put on makeup on her face. Lefikach, we continue at the top of Daf Tes, Poneho Morikos, in the Sota process, after she drinks the waters, so her face Morikos is a change of complexion to some type of jaundiced look, possibly. He kochla loy eneho, she applied cosmetics. Kochla is the kohol is a name of a type of mascara to beautify her eyes. Lefikoch eneho baltos. Therefore, in the punishment that the sota suffers, her eyes bulge out. He kola loy es sairo. She had braided her hair for the paramour. Lefiko kohen soiser es sairo. Therefore, the kohen, in disparaging her, he undoes her braided hair. He herasa loy beetzba. She made different finger motions trying to attract the paramour. Lefiko tziporneo noshos. Therefore, her fingernails fall out. He chogru lo betziltzel. She had adorned herself, girded herself with some type of attractive belt. Lefikoch kain mevi chevel hamitzri v'koshelo lamala midodeha. Therefore, the kohen brings this unseemly rope and ties it above her breasts. He poshta lo es yerecha. She extended her legs. Lefikoch yerecha nofels. Therefore, her legs fall. He kibloso al kresa. She in the act of intimacy, so she accepted him on her kresa, on her belly. Lefikoch bitnot sala. Therefore, her belly bloats, expands. He hechilosi madane oilam. She fed him the paramour, all types of dainties and delicacies. Lefika korbona meichel behemo. Therefore, the korban, the sacrifice that the sota brings, is a barley grain sacrifice, barley flour, and barley is associated with animal feed. Human beings primarily consume wheat products. Animals consume barley. So she brings as her sacrifice something that is made of what animals would eat. And you can see measure for measure. She tried to use food to attract the paramour. Therefore, she brings a sacrifice that serves that its ingredient is disparaging. It's as being animal food. He hishkaseu yayin mishubach bekoisus mishubachim. She maybe some of you have the image, the romanticized image of dining over fine wine, candlelit dinners and good wine. Well, here you have it. She gave him yayin mishubach, costly, high quality wines, bekoisus mishubachim in high quality goblets, cups. Lefikoch kohen mashke mayim hamorim b'mikedos shel cheres. Therefore, the kohen, when he gives her to drink, he gives her bitter waters in clay vessels. He osta b'seser. She practiced her sinfulness in seclusion, in private. Yoshe b'seser elyon som ba ponim. The Almighty who dwells on high in his secluded domain, kiviyochol. So he places his attention upon her. Shenemar v'ayin noef shomra neshef lemor lo sishureini oyen v'seser ponim yosim. The eye of the lewd one, the immoral one, waits for the darkness, saying, no one is going to see me, but the Almighty, from his precinct of seclusion, notices everything. Dover Acher, he also beseser, another approach to this concept of seclusion, as she practiced her immorality in seclusion. Hamokum pirsuma begolui, the Almighty exposes her, publicizes her. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Tichase sino b'mashoin tigole rosso bakohol." One who tries to cover his hatefulness, his sinfulness, will be exposed to the public. Now we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Mor text indicating Chesomet Beis. So you'll notice the parallel arrow at the bottom part of our previous Omid. So the Gemara asks, "Me'achar de'nafkalei me'achas la'achas limtzei cheshbon." Once we've learned that even small offenses, a person is held accountable for them, they can add up to one large account. Once we've learned that, ki kol sa'in sa'in barash lomali, what is the need for having a pasuk indicating, as we saw there on Daf Ches Amud Beis at the bottom, that even small offenses one is held accountable for? I've essentially learned that from the pasuk of Achas Limtzei Cheshbon. So the Gemara answers Le Kemida. I need the pasuk Ki Kol Sa'ein Sa'ein for the concept not just that a person is held accountable for even small offenses, but the method of retribution is measure for measure. Umeachar Denafgalei. And now, once we've established the concept of measure for measure, Miki Kol Sa'ein Sa'ein Barash. So then, b'sasa b'shachat triveno lomali, what am I to derive from this pasuk? In fact, when we started the sugya, we thought that b'sasa b'shachat triveno was the source for mida keneged mida. But at this point in the discussion, we realize you don't need this pasuk for that purpose. That was derived from ki kol sa'on sa'ein barash. So the Gemara answers, I need b'sasa b'shachat riveno liche de Rav Chinuna bar Papa. I need it for Rav Chinuna bar Papa's teaching. And Amir Tzashem, in our next shiur, we will pick up from this point. Even though it sounds as if we're in the middle of a discussion, this really is the jumping off point for a new discussion. The basis of this new discussion is essentially what do we really learn from the pasuk b'sasot b'shachot riveno. Mitzvah Hashem, then in our next year we'll pick up from this point. Before we conclude, however, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.